is doing well in, and its economy is growing across the board on so many levels. India could be a very big player in terms of more investment in Iran. But as with everything else, always it's still the issue of the sanctions. And if India is given a bit more maneuverability to be able to increase its trade, doing the barter deals works to a level, but there needs to always be enough rupees in Iranian banks and vice versa for allowing this trade to happen. Because of the sanctions on being able to do trade in US dollars in particular, but also euros.
So you've mentioned sanctions and payments. Now, both countries are searching for options to diversify payment channels. So what can be a viable option helping India and Iran build long-term economic relations immune to third country interference?
Well, this is the multi-billion dollar question, as it has been for years. How to be able to work around the sanctions, and also how to be able to enable the payments to flow. Lots of options have been looked at. Some have even been tried. None seem to be that successful so far, primarily because the Western financial system is still so dominant and is proving very resilient to change. But given the sort of ongoing decoupling in many ways from the Western financial system, by certain countries wanting to push that, particularly Russia, but also China. We also saw at the end of last year the floating of a new global reserve currency through the BRICS countries. This could push things forward, and if more countries also shift away from paying for oil in dollars, as Iran has done, but we've also seen that now with Russia, of course. And if this grows bigger and bigger, this will allow more options and more viability for some of those things to happen. And that would be ultimately beneficial to Iran and India. But still, you know, the dominant financial system is still there. The sanctions are there. Everyone's very scared of falling foul of the US Treasury. They're scared of falling foul of the sanctions. You know, look what happened in 2019 with so many countries that had invested in Iran had to pull out. You also had many countries that were allowed to deal with Iran after the nuclear deal, the JCPOA agreement, but they did not over concerns and the risks of being fined by the United States.
Last but not least, sir, India is aspiring to become a global economic power, and the country needs to have a reliable source of energy, therefore requiring Iran to fulfill its expansive energy needs. So how do you see the relations between the two countries further evolving in this context?
The relations between India and Iran have been getting better and have been getting stronger. We've seen that over cooperation in Afghanistan, and we're also seeing that not directly, but through more connections, particularly between China's Belt and Road Initiative, which is also bringing in India and Iran through the International North-South Transport Corridor. That's going to be connecting India, Iran, Afghanistan, Russia, Central Asia, and Europe. And as this progresses and develops, that is going to be a big source of economic development and more trade. And the movements of goods within that immediate area, this is a big benefit. But India is really having to try and walk a tightrope between pleasing the Americans on one hand and needing cheap energy on the other for its economic needs. I mean, its economy is growing very fast. It's obviously a huge country. It's going to nearly be the largest populace on the planet. So it needs as much cheap energy as it possibly can. Which is where Iran played such a central role. I mean, back before 2019, providing 10% of India's oil needs is huge. And that needs to sort of come up there again for them to be able to have this a reliable and cheap source of energy. But India's obviously come under a lot of pressure over the past year for buying Russian oil. And so it's going to have to really be careful in how it considers buying and getting more Iranian oil despite that it making utter sense on a geographic and economic level.
There you have it, Mr. Paul Cochrane, independent financial journalist from South Africa. Thank you for being on the program, sir. Now, let's see how people have reacted on social media.
Samri Backup tweeted, Iran-India trade hit $2.5 billion in 2022, a 48% rise in comparison to 2021 when the figure stood at $1.693 billion. Rice was India's main export item to Iran, while oil was Iran's main export to India. Ross wrote, It's already happening. Russia is developing economic and military ties to China, India, and Iran, developing economic ties to Saudi Arabia. These countries will no longer be using dollars to purchase oil. NATO and the EU are in chaos. Louis B. wrote, The only economy that got worse was Europe and U.S. With good trade partners like China and India and Iran, Russia is doing better than Europe and U.S.
You're listening to The Subcontinent, broadcast by IRIB English Radio. This weekly program reviews ongoing developments in India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. Listen to The Subcontinent every Monday here on IRIB English Radio.
Last week, two Pakistani nationals were released from U.S. custody at the infamous Guantanamo Bay military prison facility after spending more than 20 years in imprisonment without any charges proven against them. The two brothers, Abdul Rabbani and Muhammad Rabbani, had been arrested in Karachi in 2002 and tortured in CIA custody before being taken to Guantanamo. They are the latest inmates to be freed from American custody as the government claims to be working on emptying and closing the infamous prison.
The brothers Abdul Rahim Ghulam Rabbani, 55, and Muhammad Ahmad Ghulam Rabbani, 53, were arrested from Karachi in September 2002 by Pakistani security forces and handed over to the U.S. authorities. They were held at a CIA detention center in Afghanistan for almost 2 years before being transferred to Guantanamo. U.S. authorities had accused the two of providing some al-Qaeda members with housing, travel, and other support. According to sources, Ahmad Rabbani frequently went on hunger strikes and would be force-fed through a tube. U.S. military records describe the two brothers as providing little intelligence of value statements during the interrogations that were obtained on the ground of physical abuse. Mushtaq Ahmad Khan, the chairman of the Human Rights Committee in the upper house of Pakistan's parliament, stated that the duo was innocent but were detained without trial or access to any judicial help by the U.S. government, thus violating the international human rights conventions. The departure of the two brothers has reduced the detainee population at Guantanamo Bay to 32 men, all sent there during the years of the George W. Bush administration. During its war on terror, the United States has held about 780 detainees at the notorious prison complex.
Guantanamo Bay has been the center of controversy for unlawful detention, denial of judicial process, physical and psychological abuse, torture, and gross violation of human rights. The case of the Rabbani brothers highlights the human rights violations conducted by the U.S. government at different prison facilities. The indefinite detention of prisoners without charge or trial is a violation of international human rights laws that the United States has been disregarding over the years.
Established by the Bush administration in 2002, Guantanamo Bay Military Prison Facility has been used as a detention camp for foreign terrorism suspects. The prison became functional after the September 11th attacks in New York that led to the cry of war on terror by the U.S. Over the past 20 years, more than 700 prisoners, all Muslims, have been detained at the ill-famed prison. During the peak years of war on terror, the facility held over 600 people accused of terrorism by the U.S. authorities. 20 years later, 32 inmates remain at the military detention center. According to the Pentagon, 18 have been cleared for transfer if stable third-party countries are willing to take them. The Guantanamo Bay facility has been indelibly marked with accusations of human rights violations and has drawn criticism for its indefinite detention without a trial policy. The U.S. government has long defended its indefinite detention policy at Guantanamo, claiming that such measures are necessary to protect national security. However, human rights groups have argued that these actions are illegal and have called for an end to the practice of indefinite detention.
Close Guantanamo!
As per international law experts, the full reckoning of harms caused by the disastrous war on terror can only begin when Guantanamo is closed for good.
Now, to have more insights on this, we are joined by Mr. Ken O'Keefe, geopolitical analyst from Liverpool, England. First of all, welcome to the program, sir. Now, in another instance of gross human rights violations committed by the U.S., two innocent Pakistani nationals were held for 20 years in Guantanamo prison without any proven charges. Now, has the international community failed to stand for the innocents suffering without trial in the U.S. prisons?
I don't think that there can be any serious question as to whether or not the obligations of the international community, in particular the bodies that deal with violations of international law, are being violated. And while the crimes are being committed, there are no prosecutions. And if we look at, say, the International Criminal Court, we see that African nations have been targeted, but I don't see one conviction, not one, not even any prosecution, of American war criminals for all of the various tortures, genocides, war of aggression, crimes against humanity, use of depleted uranium, experimental weapons. All of these things have been used in a place called Iraq, which I've been to as a Marine. So I've seen it with my own eyes. And it's ironic because those of us who believe in law realize that we must affect real and genuine lawful remedy. Because if we don't have lawful remedy, what alternative do we have? Violence. And we're leading towards World War III already with what's happening in Ukraine. So it really is time for people to take responsibility and understand that these bodies not doing their job is a reflection of us as people not doing our job. And if we do everything we're capable of, we will affect a lawful remedy process that will make convictions. And you know what? I only want the law. But law is brutal when it comes to committing the worst of crimes.
Mr. O'Keefe, the United States argues its human rights obligations are under international law. However, the truth shows otherwise. So the question is, why do these evident violations remain unpunished?
In order to understand how the world functions, it really is critical, and I've been saying this now for decades, and I stand by the position. In order to understand the way the world works, we really have to understand the nature of money and how it's produced and who has the money and how do they use that money and how much money do the rest of us have. If we look at the trail of money, we find that the bankers benefit profoundly from war. They also benefit from social strife and injustice. They benefit from debt, which is foisted upon the populations of the world. They are the ones that are pulling the strings. And unfortunately, we have not done what is necessary, and therefore it is absolutely essential that we recognize that our leaderships have failed us across the board. There are some exceptions, and ironically, I've just returned from Iran, and you know, I see more benefits in the society of Iran than I do in my own birth nation, which is literally taking a path towards Satan on multiple levels.
Sir, do you think any inquiry will be conducted anytime soon to look into these crimes?
You know, it really is important that what gets lost in the numbers and statistics is the people. We talked about earlier, the Pakistani prisoners from Guantanamo who spent over two decades in there. It's not even just the victims of these types of things and what impact it has. I've been in a prison myself, one of the most notorious prisons in the world, and I've experienced torture firsthand myself. So I understand what this does to the average person and how difficult it is just on an individual level. But what about the families? You know, all of these people, these prisoners that are held without any due process of law, literally oftentimes incognito in places like Guantanamo, no access to your family, attorneys, representation, and no basic needs as even a prisoner. These things add up, and it creates a lot of pain for people that requires healing. And in order to affect healing, there's only one way, and that is through justice. How can you heal from a crime if there is never any justice? The only way then is through God, and you know, God will take care of God's part. We need to take care of the part down here on planet Earth. And affecting the law and lawful remedy is, I stand by it. This has got to be the way. So where we have improvements and necessary changes with regard to the law, let's do so. Let's hold our leaders to account. Let's stop shifting the blame to our leaders who are corrupt when we have to accept the fact that we're responsible for them.
Last but not least, Mr. O'Keefe, you've mentioned getting away with it. It's clear to the international community that there were and continue to be violations of human rights norms at different U.S. prisons, but there has been little done about it. So why has the international community failed in enforcing the law against the war crimes of the U.S.?
There are several layers of protection for the United States, which effectively provides immunity to it. In particular, the international laws governing the worst of crimes, war crimes, crimes against humanity, torture, genocide, things of this nature. The International Criminal Court and the International Court of Justice are not doing their job. And they're able to get away with not doing their job by shifting the blame to other parties, such as rarely the United States and even less so Israel. These bodies shift the blame, so nobody takes responsibility and no prosecutions occur. But again, I did mention earlier, African convictions have occurred at the International Criminal Court. What, is Africa the only continent with international crimes being committed? I beg to differ. My birth nation of the United States is most responsible for these crimes, and yet the prosecutions don't exist. Why? Effectively, they're immune from prosecution through various inside Machiavellian means to effectively provide immunity.
On that note, I would like to thank Mr. Ken O'Keefe, geopolitical analyst from Liverpool, England, for being on the program. Now, let's see how people have reacted on social media.
Jacob Chirai tweeted, "Uncharged Pakistani Guantanamo prisoners released after two decades. U.S. officials allowed two Pakistani brothers to return to their home country after holding them at Guantanamo Bay without charges for two decades. Abdul and Muhammad Rabbani accused the CIA of torturing them." Jeff Bickerton wrote, "The men were innocently imprisoned in Guantanamo Bay for 21 years. There was no trial, no court proceedings, no charges against them. U.S. military records describe the two as providing little intelligence of value. 32 people remain at Guantanamo." Imran Parrot Kid tweeted, "The detention of two Pakistani brothers for 20 years without charges at Guantanamo Bay is a clear violation of basic human rights. As a country that claims to champion human rights, the United States must hold itself accountable to fair and just treatment for all."
And that was our episode about the Iran-India trade ties and also two Pakistani brothers finally reaching home after spending two decades at Guantanamo without charges. Take great care.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked among
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant factor.
امامت یک اصل زنده است در تاریخ اسلام.
امامت is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Mandegari. Stay tuned.
شخصیت ما برای امام زمانمون مورد قبول باشد.
What should we do so that our personality is accepted by Imam al-Mahdi? Which one is more important? The view of Imam al-Mahdi or public people? The ordinary people can't solve their own problems, let alone to others. Now, in order to be accepted by Imam al-Mahdi, we must develop a special talent in ourselves, like the power of recognition and understanding.
اونایی که خدا رو کوچک میشمارن، اونایی که خدا دنیا رو برای خودشون بزرگ میدونن، اونایی که
Those who belittle Allah and augment the value of material wealth, those who forget the resurrection day and religion, and those who accompany Satan are surely not approved by Imam al-Mahdi. In order to find the power of recognition, we must know that we are always under the watch of Allah. We are always careful about the cameras of police and security. How is it that we don't see Allah's camera over our lives? Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Mandegari. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
Bankruptcies in Sweden increased for the seventh consecutive month in February, with retailers squeezed by declining household consumption, and the construction industry is struggling in the wake of an ongoing housing market rout. Sweden's economy is buckling under the weight of soaring consumer prices and increased borrowing costs. A recession may already be underway, as indebted households, whose mortgage rates are typically fixed for short periods, tighten purse strings, and a plunge in housing prices is rapidly reducing investments in new dwellings. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. RT wrote in this regard, bankruptcies in Sweden soared for the seventh consecutive month in February amid declining household consumption and growing pressure on construction companies from an ongoing housing market crunch, Bloomberg reported recently. A severe slump in Sweden's real estate sector has damaged the Nordic region's largest economy, which is struggling with surging consumer prices and growing interest rates. The country has been facing its worst housing price plunge in three decades, which has led to a reduction in investments in new dwellings. The situation has contributed to a surge in defaults in the country, according to the media outlet, citing Credit Reference Agency, UC, the number of bankruptcy filings in February jumped by 11% year-on-year. The retail and the motor vehicle trade industries were hit the hardest last month. UC economist Johanna Blum said in a statement, "The number of bankruptcies is still at a high level and has increased compared with last year," adding that there is little optimism ahead as more rate hikes are expected while inflation isn't slowing. In February, the largest Swedish company that declared bankruptcy was air carrier Air Leap, with annual sales of 278 million kronor, that is $27 million, Bloomberg said, citing Credit Safe. The Swedish government announced at the end of 2022 that the country was entering a recession that would last until 2025. The development reflects an EU-wide trend as the bloc teeters on the edge of a recession. In February, a statistics agency Eurostat reported a wave of bankruptcies among EU businesses, which surged to the highest level in the fourth quarter of 2022 since records began in 2015. Defaults jumped by 26.8% compared to the previous 3 months, Eurostat said, noting that the number of bankruptcy declarations increased during all four quarters of 2022. The accommodation and food services industries were hit the hardest in the final 3 months of 2022 compared to the same period of 2019, with a 97.7% increase in insolvencies among EU businesses. High inflation and interest rate hikes will affect many Swedish households and slow down the country's economic growth next year, a leading bank said in a report published recently, Trend Report citing Xinhua. Sweden's gross domestic product GDP growth is expected to be -1.1% next year, said Matthias Persson, Swedbank's chief economist and global head of macro research.
in an interview with Swedish television SVT recently. The Swedish central bank's policy rate is expected to increase from the present 1.75% to 3% by February, according to Swedbank's latest economic outlook. It expects inflation and unemployment rate to reach 7.4% and 7.6% respectively in 2023. In consequence, Swedish households are expected to spend a higher proportion of their disposable income on mortgages since 1990s, a situation which Persson said would have a wider effect on the Swedish economy. Persson told SVT the labor market still shows resilience, but the situation is expected to worsen when employment-intensive industries such as retail and construction are affected. In its latest economic forecast, the European Commission said Swedish economy would be the worst performing in the EU in 2023. Recently, Statistics Sweden published a report showing that Sweden's gross domestic product decreased by 0.9% in the fourth quarter of 2022 compared with the third quarter. Jessica Engdahl, head of section at National Accounts Department, Statistics Sweden said GDP contracted in the fourth quarter with a broad downturn in capital formation and household consumption. Compared with the previous quarter, gross fixed capital formation in the fourth quarter decreased by 0.8%. Exports went down by 1%, imports down by 1.1%, and market production shrank by 1.3%. Though the full-year GDP of 2022 increased by 2.4% from last year, several major banks have given negative predictions of Sweden's GDP this year. Swedbank expected a decline of 1.3%, SEB expected it to shrink by 1.2%, and Nordi, more pessimistic, forecast a 2% decline. The slowdown in economic activities also take a toll on households. Household final consumption decreased by 0.2% in the fourth quarter compared with the previous quarter, with decreased expenditure on furnishings and household equipment. Food and consumption abroad mainly contributed to the downturn. Households' real disposable income decreased by 2.7% compared with the fourth quarter of 2021. Mattias Persson, chief economist at Swedbank, told Swedish television, households will have a tough time. In his view, Riksbank, Sweden's central bank, needs to act more than previously thought because a very weak krona was also to blame. The chief economist added that the Swedish households took considerably more of a beating than those in the rest of Europe and the US, due partly to the krona weakened by the inflation shock and partly to the fact that Swedes are generally more indebted and more sensitive to interest rate increases. Swedbank, forecasting housing prices to continue downward, said this in turn leads to the housing market in Sweden standing out as one of the hardest hit in the entire Western world right now. Earlier this month, the European Commission said in its winter 2023 economic forecast that Swedish economy would be the worst performing in the European Union in 2023, with an estimated decline of 0.8% this year.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome to yet another episode of Islamic Upbringing. Today we have had the pleasure to invite Professor Salman Naqvi. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Dear listeners, Professor Naqvi is a faculty member at the Al-Mustafa University, and we have had this pleasure to have him in the studio. We, in this program, discuss your problems, questions related to the Islamic upbringing and different topics which have a very great deal with the Islamic upbringing of children. And the answers are based upon the Noble Quran and the narrations from Prophet Muhammad and his family, may peace be upon them. A very warm welcome, Professor Naqvi. This is our continuing session of obedience. And you said that when a child has aggressive behavior, it's a result of suppression of thoughts, suppression of feelings. So where do parents go wrong? Like, how do they suppress their kids and they don't even realize that they are suppressing their kids?
And the important thing is that we should always realize the fact that a child whom we have been entrusted with Allah Almighty is a precious thing. And I have to take care of his upbringing and should be concerned with it. It's not that I have all my... Of course, I can't spend all my time with the child, but whenever I'm spending my child, especially the father, it should be a quality time. It should be time where should be a positive engagement between the family. And we need to be able to discuss things together when we are engaging with each other. And suppression comes when sometimes it comes because I'm engrossed in my own things.
Life, business, life.
I need to take care of so many things. I just can't bear the child coming up with things and issues and problems all the time. And I tell him off or tell her off, or keep quiet or keep it to yourself. I can't do anything. That feeling puts, that expression of feelings puts the child off. And there becomes a barrier between him and you. And you can't. And then he starts looking up to other people.
All right.
And there the problem begins. He then goes out and looks for that love from other, from peers or other people who may put him off onto the wrong path. So we need to be very careful. We should always be careful of the fact that we should create a positive liaison with our children. We should never let them down. We should never let them feel that we don't care for them. Yes, if you are tensed, you are caught up in your own problems, ask him to give you some space, give you some time, and you will come back to him or her if you are.
So assure your child that you're coming back.
Of course, you're concerned. You are ready to listen, but let him feel the fact that yes, I need some space for doing things, and then he should feel assured, as you said, that I will be coming back to him or her to take care of his or her problems and issues and whatever they want.
So what I can say over here, the thing that in the love of parents goes wrong here is that their love does not diminish at all. Their love towards their children is same, but the fact what goes wrong over here is that your over-occupiedness occupies you so much that you're not able to pay quality attention, quality time, you're not able to spend enough time
with your child, which actually results into some different kind of personality. He may have some different kind of psychological issues tomorrow. So being occupied is good, but not so much occupied that you miss the very important golden chance of spending the golden time, the quality time with your kids, which the childhood will never come back. So there would not be any other way to compensate that thing now. So we'll discuss more on this after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned with us.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I'm Zaina with Professor Nakavi, and we're discussing obedience, love, under the umbrella term of Islamic upbringing. Our love towards our children is very important, and expression of that love is also very important. How obedient we are towards our own parents reflects the very fact of being, the importance of being obedient, and that indirectly teaches our children to be obedient. Well, Professor Nakavi, where else do you think parents do right thing to teach love to their children, and where do they do wrong things to teach love to their children? In what context is the love shown, the love expressed? Like, I'll give you an example. There are mothers. Mothers are very, very emotional. I myself am a mother, and sometimes I myself am a victim of this, that you provide each and everything to your child, which is not even required, which is not even necessary. And mothers often think that this is love, to fulfill each and every small demand of a child. Do you think this kind of love is something that's the wrong way of expressing your love?
Of course, as you said very clearly, that doing everything for your child will be pampering him. He would or she would start expecting that everything that he or she wants has to be done, even if it's not within your power to do so. So it starts with small things, maybe. He or she would say, look, buy me that thing. I want this, I want that. So it starts from small things. And he or she doesn't realize that one day will come that my parents can't afford it, for example.
Right.
That is one issue. Or
because we have pampered our child that way.
So we need to make them realize the fact that they can't ask for everything. Or even if they ask for anything, it does not mean that they would be given that thing and provided with that thing they want. And they should learn, we should be taught to make decisions regarding what should be, what should they need, what should they really require, what they really want, what they should really be looking for. Something which would be beneficial for them. For example, we can make a balance between things. Oh, do you want this or that? This is, you can show them and tell them that this is good for you, this is not good for you. Make the decision. You want this? If you want this, you can't have this. You want a toffee or do you want a piece of maybe, you want fruit? A child would say, I want chocolate. He likes to eat chocolate.
Okay.
You say, oh, chocolate is good, but fruits are
Why
better.
Why don't you taste fruits right now?
Fruits are better for you. Chocolates will damage your teeth.
You won't. So give reasons for, if you're not fulfilling their wish, give them reasons why
you're
not.
Tell them why you're not giving them. Or you say, oh, okay, you want this, it's good for you, but I can't afford it at the moment. Give me some time. And then make them realize that, look, having material things is not important.
Not every day is sunny day.
Yes, material goods are not important. More important is spiritual gains.
All right.
Rewards for doing things which are good for your health, doing things which are good for your spiritual health.
Yeah. We'll discuss more on this after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات.
Imam Ali alayhi salam said, be like a friendly physician who applies medicine where it is useful.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I'm Zainab with Professor Naqavi, and we are discussing love and obedience. Well, Professor Naqavi, we have been discussing about the mothers especially, or the parents, who think that giving or spending money on their children, or like fulfilling their each and every demand, is the best form of expression of love. But don't you think the same love would actually develop a very irresponsible personality? Because as this child grows up and he does not become responsible, because he thinks my mom is there to do, my father is there to do, they are there to do, because they have always shown there that we are there to, we are there.
Yes, so as a result of that, he or she expects everything to be done as he or she commands, and that should not be the case. You can put it off by saying that, okay, if you do this, if you do make it conditional, uncontingent upon doing something. Oh, if you tidy up your bed, I will give you this. If you clean your bathroom, I will do this for you. So you can make it conditional. You can make it a reward for doing something which is necessary. So if
you want to give something, teach them obedience at the same time.
Exactly.
So you're saying that expressing love is okay, but at the same time, if you're making them learn something in return, that's very important. Like being obedient, you're telling them, like, all right, if you want this particular thing, you have to carry out this thing so that you get this particular gift. But don't you think some parents who promise their children that I'll be giving you a particular gift, and then they fail to buy that or give that, or even if it's in there, they can afford it, still they fail to do it because they just feel like, I just gave this promise to a child and don't give it enough importance. Don't you think the child with this ignorance will develop as a disobedient child?
The worst thing that could happen is that the child will lose trust and faith in you.
All right.
Will not expect you accept you as a responsible person or a truthful person. Of course, not keeping your promise, in some ulama, some scholars say it is not recommended, it is makruh. Some say it is haram.
All right.
Not keeping your promise is, in any case, very important. It's not a good thing. It's not commendable. It is either haram or it is makruh.
Because we have narrations which say, if you give promise to someone, then do fulfill that promise.
So, as far as the moral thing or morality goes, it's not a very good thing at all. So a child will start becoming like you in that case also, if you don't keep your promise. So number one, keep a promise something which you can afford, which you can manage. Number two, if you give a promise, keep it. It should be something which should have value for the person, for the child. I mean, it should be beneficial for him, not something which is harmful.
Which he thinks as is beneficial, but you don't see as a parent it's beneficial.
I mean, you can say, if you want to buy, what do you want to want me to buy you? Do you want something to, for example, I buy you some toy which you're going to break up in a few days, or I give you something, some book to read, or if I give you something
very resourceful, that's very
a game
useful.
Which will increase your mental abilities.
All right.
Not just toys which you can play around with and break them up. Of course, those have to be given also, but some toys are useful and beneficial in the sense that they teach you things.
Yeah.
And therefore, it depends upon your understanding. What is, number one, possible for you? Number two, what is good for the child?
All right.
And reward him. Learn him, make him learn how to become obedient.
All right. Thank you so much, Professor, for being with us. Thank you so much to our listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. In case you want to listen to our program again, go back to our official website, which is www.parstoday.ir/en. Go to the tab COI, Call of Islam, and you'll find an archive of all our programs. You can also find us on the social media platforms by just searching COI, Call of Islam, and you can also feel free to send us your queries, questions, or comments on our email ID, which is englishradio@irib.ir. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.